We're back in Parashat Bereishit to quickly recap the end of what we said last time, which was the basis of what we're going to discuss today, though it's its own complete entity, its own complete shiur. Is we talked about last time how the process of six leading into seven is inherently a process of creation, and we see that most fundamentally in the story of creation, that we have a process of six stages where everything is being created, leading up to that seventh stage, which is the reality of reflection, of rest, of coming to a place of completion or perfection. And we talked about how what that's doing over the course of those 6 days is we're coming to a perfect reality. We saw at the end of the sixth day, Vayar Elokim et kol asher asah v'nei tov me'od. He looks around at the end of the sixth day in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and sees that everything is tov me'od, greater than any other day. It's not just tov, it's tov me'od. And that was the end of the first presentation of the story of creation, the first presentation of the story of the creation in total, including mankind. And then as we transition into Perek Bet, Pasuk Dalet, we have what we're going to call, which is all of Perek Bet and all of Perek Gimel. We have what we called the story of Gan Eden, the story that's referred to as Chet Adam HaRishon, the sin of Adam and Chava. And that story, again, on a pshat level, seems to be taking place after the story of creation. Meaning, if we were not to have Chazal behind us, or honestly not read the psukim critically, we could say that it happened on day 8. But very clearly, based on Chazal and also based on the content of the second presentation of the creation of man, it's exactly that. It's a second presentation. In which place it's taking place on day 6. The creation of man in the first presentation takes place on day 6. And so too, the creation of man in the second presentation also is taking place on day 6. But that leads to two questions. One is, why have two presentations at all? Why not just have one presentation of the creation of man? Why do we have the original presentation within the context of all of creation, and this second presentation in the context of this story of Gan Eden? The second thing that we know, that based on what we learned last time, is that if six is inherently, essentially a creative process, and the story of Gan Eden, we're saying, takes place during those 6 days of creation, it takes place on day 6, then that means that it must be that something is being created through the story of Gan Eden. That it's not just Chet Adam HaRishon. It's not just the story of the sin and of the downfall. But if it exists within the context of Sheishit Dimei Bereishit, it must be that we're creating something in there without which we can't go out into human history. And the question is, what are we creating in that story? That's not how we really look at that story. We see it again as a chet and as a downfall. And we also have to reconcile those two, because that's true. It is also a chet and a downfall. So is something being created to let us go into history, or is it the downfall of man? The answer is going to be, as it always is, both. And how do we line those up? How do we reconcile that tension? What's happening? Now, when we dive into the psukim of the first and second presentations, the actual presentation itself is very different. If we had a marker, we'd start putting things on the board now. So start keeping your own charts, okay? The presentations are very different. Let's get into the content of that. I always prefer that you use your chumashim out of deference to those who follow online. Psukim are also on the source sheets, and I'll be referring to the source sheets, but all psukim we're going to be quoting are from Perek Aleph and Beth of Bereishit, and if you have your chumashim in front of you, we'll quote by Perek and Pasuk. I prefer and recommend using your chumashim, but if not, you also have the source sheets in front of you. In source number 1 in Perek Aleph, before you get source number 1, let's go through what happens during creation. We put it up on the board. What happens on each one of the days? What's created on the first day?
Light.
Then we have the creation of? The firmament, whatever that means. The firmament, the rakia. Then day 3? Land, trees, grass, plant life is day 3. Day 4? The sun, the moon, and the stars, the heavenly bodies. Day 5, birds and fish. Day 6, animals and man. There's a clear progression here, a progression that's used both by the classical philosophers, as well as in the context of Torah. Anybody familiar with the stages of life that are being presented here, the stages of creation that are being presented here in the original presentation of creation? It's the logical, classic presentation. We'll use the Hebrew terms.
Rock and then...
plant.
Yeah, and then animal.
And then man. Excellent. You have, on the lowest level, you have what's referred to in our sources as domain. Domain literally means silent, inanimate matter, the creation of land, the firmament, the earth, domain. Then the next level up is tzomeach, the creation of plant life. Above that you have chai, animals. And then the highest level, number four, is referred to as midaber, speaking beings, which is somehow definitionally what humanity is about, according to these sources. You see that even in the contrast, right? What was the first one? Domain, which means silence, that which can't speak at all. There's science data to back up the fact that plants can actually interact. That if you interact with a plant, it will actually grow better. That they relate to relationship. They can't speak, but that they relate to speech. So you have domain, tzomeach, chai is animals, which can communicate but not speak. And then the highest level is midaber, which is humanity. Only humanity has the capacity for speech. But that's the progression. Inanimate matter, plants, animals, humanity. Yeah?
They didn't consider the same part of
humanity. Who is they?
In that definition of the
state. It's chai. Oh, meaning it was able to medaber. We're not going to get into those kind of fine details within creation because we're not even going to scratch the surface. I actually don't even know. We'll talk about it at the end of year today. I'm not even sure where we're going to go next from here. Whether we're just going to jump to the next year and kind of my Rebbe's presentation of things. We might actually sit and try to unpack some of Bereshit, but Parshat Bereshit, I think I mentioned this in our first year, like, we're going to do the best we can, because we're talking about a whole different plane of existence. So whether the snake spoke or not, the snake wasn't the snake, and the trees weren't trees, and the gun wasn't the gun, and humanity wasn't humanity. We're talking about a plane of existence that we have no concept of. We're talking in our limited terms. So the fact that the snake spoke in Perek Bet and Gimel of Bereshit doesn't concern me as much because snakes today, as far as I know, definitely don't speak. So we're going to put them in the category of Chai. What does it mean that he had an interaction with Chava in the story? It's a good question. But there's everything in Bereshit is a good question. So that's the classic presentation. Again, in Bereshit, in the first presentation, Perek Aleph, Domein, Tzomeach, Chai, Medaber. And one would think if we're going to have a presentation, a second presentation of the same story, that it would go the same way. If we turn to Perek Bet and Bereshit, we would expect the same presentation, but that's not what we find. Let's go through the story together. It's very interesting. Listen to it sensitively, thinking about the fact that it should be presented the same way, but you're going to see very evidently it's not. Perek Bet Pasuk Dalet. These are the generations of the heavens and the earth when God created them, when God created the heavens and the earth. Nothing had sprouted yet, there was no vegetation. Because God had not had rain yet. There was no mankind yet. So a mist came up from the ground and watered the surface of the earth. What's created first? What was created in that pasuk? Man. Mankind is created first. In fact, the pasuk before even goes out of its way to state that there is no vegetation. That out of this barren land emerges man. Then, in the next pasuk, Chet, Vayita Hashem Elokim Gan Be'edem Mikedem, Vayasim Shamata Adam Asher Yatzar. God puts man into Gan Eden, Pasuk Tet, Vayitzmach Hashem Elokim min ha'adama, kol eitz nechmad l'ba'er, v'tov l'ma'achal, v'itz ha'chaim b'toch ha'gam, v'itz da'at tov ha'ra. What happens? What emerges in Pasuk Tet? Tzomeach. Then we get the, once man is in Gan Eden, once he's created, then the vegetation comes forth. Manin. Interesting. Okay. Then we get a long discussion of a bunch of rivers. Also interesting. Now we come to Pasuk, skip forward to Pasuk Yudchet. Vayomer Hashem Elokim, lo tov hayot ha'adam levado, e'aselo ezer kenegdo. Hashem Elokim says, it's not good for man to be alone. I'm going to make him an ezer kenegdo. I'm going to make him a companion. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim min ha'adama. So what does man, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu then obviously create? What? Chava, no, not. In response to he's lonely and needs a wife, pasuk yutet, vayitzer Hashem Elokim min ha'adama kol chayat ha'sadeh ve'et kol of ha'shamayim vayibol ha'adam yirot ma yikra lo v'chol asher yikra lo ha'adam nefesh chayat u'shmo. He produces all of the animal kingdom. So what are we getting now? Chaya. So not only is it out of order, but the whole flow of the paragraph doesn't make any sense. Man is lonely and needs a companion, so he gets a dog. Right? That's clearly not what it means. I mean, we all felt in the previous pasuk that he was looking, no, not for like man's best friend, that he was looking for an actual life companion. He's looking for chavah, he's looking for a woman. And yet, what's produced next is chaya, which clearly didn't exist yet. So that man can, well, what did it say? Man can what? Name them? Okay. So God names all, so man names all the animals. Pasuk Chaf, Vayikra ha'adam shemot l'chol ha'behema, l'of ha'shamayim, l'chol chayat ha'sdeh, l'adam l'matza ezer kenegdo. So he names all of the animals and all of the birds, and unsurprisingly, what doesn't he find? His mate. Because he hasn't found another human being yet. Then, Vayapel Hashem Elokim tardima v'chulei, then he creates woman. No luck? Okay, it's fine. No, it's not worth it. Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Then once woman is created, Vayomer Ha'adam Zot Hapam Etzem Etzamai, this time when the creation is literally coming from me. Kadosh Baruch Hu took part of my side out and built woman from my side. Basar Mi B'sari L'zot Yikarei Isha Kinesh L'kachazot, this will be the Isha, this is my companion. Then the Chumash does something very odd, especially in the context of the story of creation, the story of Gan Eden. It now is going to zoom out and give us a line that's relevant for all history. We're going to totally leave the narrative, totally break the flow of the story. Al kein ya'azov ish et aviv ve'et imo, v'tabak v'isho v'yil v'sar echad. Therefore, for all of history, a man shall leave his mother and father, and he will cling to his wife, and they'll be one flesh. Great advice. Why is it here? Why is it here? And then our concluding concept, the fact that it moves to Paragimel shows that it's intellectually a concluding concept, but it's very much not, because in the Chumash it's all one paragraph. They were both not wearing any clothing and they were not embarrassed. And then the Nachash comes out. Now at this point I'm so far lost, it doesn't really matter. So there's a lot of weird things happening here. We had a very logical progression in Perek Aleph. Things were going really well. Our first presentation, domain, sameach, chai, yedaber. Inanimate, plant, animal, human. It was an ascent, we were ascending up the ladder. Here we have man being created, and then he gets put into Gan Eden, which sprouts when he comes there, and then he's looking for a mate, and he can't find one, so God gives him animals, and then he names them, so we have the animals coming out then. He still doesn't find them. Finally, he's looking for, so then he creates woman, and once he creates woman, now we can know that for all time, man looks for woman, and they come together. By the way, they were also unclad, and that might bring about the Nachash. Great! Ever notice this when you read Sukkim on Parshat Bereishit? Everything switches around. What's the meaning of the switching around of the order here? Let's pull out deeper layers of contrast between these two presentations. One of them is even in the relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. How does HaKadosh Baruch Hu present himself in Perek Aleph? How do we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Perek Aleph? You all have a cheat sheet. It's full of Chumash. What? As Elohim. God somehow is specifically utilizing the name Elohim, and something drastically shifts in the second presentation in Perek Bet. We switch to Hashem Elohim. The name Yud Kei Vav Kei is introduced. So even in the way that we're referring to God, God goes from being referred to in Perek Aleph as Elohim, and somehow the relationship to man is switching, is different. The interaction is different in this process, and now it's coming out as Hashem Elohim. Another contrast.
In the first, it's purely Hashem doing all the creation, and the second, it's almost as if Adam is partnering with him at some level, like both humble and
me. Man is definitely more involved. It's definitely more interactive. There's almost, to draw from what you're saying, there's almost a sense of distance in the first presentation. It's almost like from a God's eye view.
Right.
And somehow in Perek Bet, we're living within the world of man, the world of humanity. And somehow that switches things. We're going to build to that. Okay? Let's talk about that even on the level of the relationship between man and woman. How is the relationship between man and woman defined in Perek Aleph? What's the nature of their relationship? Take a look at Perek Aleph Pasuk Chav Zayin. Here we have the creation of man and woman. Vayivra Elokim et Adam b'tzalmo, b'tzelem Elokim bara oto. God creates man in his image. Zachar u'nekeva bara otam. Just, again, simple, clear, direct. God creates man and woman. What's the nature of their relationship? Vayivarech otam Elokim vayomer lahem, pur revu milu'at haaretz v'kivshua. What is the functionality of their relationship? Puruvu, to reproduce. There is a very clear, functional reason to have a man and a woman. You need both a man and a woman in order to reproduce, and the command upon them is to reproduce. That's defining the nature of their relationship in Perek Aleph. Perek Bet is much, much more complex than that. What brings about the desire, so to speak, and even the word desire is not going to be a Perek Aleph type of word. What brings about the desire for the creation of woman in Perek Bet? Loneliness. Is that what you're going to say? Loneliness. I mean, you feel it in the Pesukim. Says it pretty much explicitly. Lo tov ha'adam hayot levado. It's not good for him to be alone. It's the entire time, in the entirety of the creation story, where we use the phrase lo tov. We have tov in all of Perek Aleph. We even have ra. We have a concept of ra in Perek Bet. Et hadat tov v'ra. The only time we see lo tov, a state of not having achieved tov, when a person is by themselves, when they're not yet in that state of relationship, when there isn't yet that reality of union between a husband and a wife, that's lo tov. Hayot adam levado. There's loneliness. That's what brings it about. And then if we go forward to that pasuk that takes us out of the story, it says, therefore, for all time, al kein yazov ish et aviv ve'et imo, a man should leave his father and mother's household, v'davach v'ishto, and cling to his wife, upur revu, right? And produce children. Thank you. What does it say? And join and bond and become one. There's no mention of Puruvu. There's no functionality in the context of that relationship. It's talking about the relationship on an entirely different level. The relationship between man and woman is being a relationship of bonding, of connecting, of relating, of becoming one. There's no discussion of Puruvu in the second presentation of creation. One functional puruvu, the other one a response to loneliness and describing a reality of bonding and connecting in relationship. Let's go back to doing good. Let's go back to the animals. Let's go back to the animals. Our old friends. God realizes that man is lonely. Lo tov ha'adam hayut levado. And God therefore produces the animal kingdom and brings the animal kingdom to him. He clearly has some sort of interaction with them that results in his naming of the animals. And only then is it clear to him that he hasn't found what he's looking for, and woman is produced. If you take a look at the Midrash in source number 3, it emphasizes this point. It's talking about a conversation between God and the Malachim, and God is talking about how amazing mankind is. That when mankind was produced, in the underline in source number 3 from Bamidbar Rabbah, Kevan Shebara Adam, once mankind was created, Ha'eviran Lefanav, he brought all of the animal kingdom before him. Amarlo, it's incredible the way the Midrash frames it. This is the conversation between man and God at that time. Amarlo, God said to Adam, Mashmotan Shel Elu, what are the names of these things? I don't know. What are the names of these things? Amar, so Adam said, Lazeh na'eli kot shor, going to call this an ox. Ulazeh ari, and that's a lion. Ulazeh sus, and that's a horse. Ulazeh chamor, and that's a donkey. Ulazeh gamal, and that's a camel. Ulazeh nesher, and that's an eagle. Shne'emar v'yikra ha'adam shimot. The Medrash being Chazal takes it one step further. Amar le, v'ata mashimecha. Patrick HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to Adam Rishon and goes, and you, what's your name? You'd expect Adam to go, I don't know, you tell me. But he doesn't. Adam says, Amarlo Adam, I am called Adam. Why? Lama? Shenivreti min ha'adama, because I came from the Adama. Then God turns to man and says, Amarlo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani, Mashmi, and what is my name, says God. Incredible. What's my name? Amar Lein. It's just Hashem here. Clearly the implication is Adoshem. This is Lashon of Adnut. Lama Shata Adon Al Kol Abriot. Because you are the master of all creations. What's interesting about the nature of the naming here is that who's doing the naming? Adam. Adam is naming the animals. Because he's defining it based on what? What? How can he possibly give it a name? Based on what?
His essence and reality.
Based on?
His essence and reality.
How does he know it's essence and reality? Based on what? His experience of the animal. He sees that, and he does. Maybe he sees into the depth of what it is, but he sees that to me is a sus. That to me is a gamal. That to me is an ari.
How do you know that there was never anything like it?
Because of the interaction. Meaning the only thing he'd be working on is he's defining the animal kingdom based on his relationship to it. He's defining a Kadosh Baruch Hu as what? Adoshem. Maze Adon. My master. He's giving God a name that's purely about his relationship to God.
How does he even have the words to describe?
Because he's created Shalem. He's created Yashar. I mean, Adam Rishon was, like, we may or may not talk about this in the future. Shira is on a total, I guess, we're dependent to. He's already on a totally different level. Right? But he's talking about it based on it's all relative to him. And that's really the key word. It's all relative to him. We see this come out very beautifully in one more small diuk, a little bit more of a diuk than we've been making so far, but like really focusing on Tupsukim. Take a look at the way that it's framed. In Perek Bet, Pasuk Yutet. Listen carefully for the words and look for what changes. Vayitzar Hashem Elokim min ha'adama kol chayat ha'sadeh ve'et kol of ha'shamayim. God creates from the ground all of the chayat ha'sadeh and all of the birds in the sky. Vayavel ha'adam lirot ma yikralo. He brings them to man to see what he'll name them. V'kol ha'she yikralo ha'adam nefesh chaya hushimon. Whatever he calls them, that's going to be its name. Vayikra ha'adam shemot l'chol ha'behima u'l'chol ul'of ha'shamayim u'l'chol chayat ha'sadeh. And God gives names to all the behemot and all of the birds and all of the chayat ha'sadeh u'l'adam u'matzah nezah kanado. What changes in the presentation of the animal kingdom in Pasuk Yutet to Pasuk Chaf?
I mean, birds.
The birds are in both. Not into. In addition to. Why is there suddenly there? God says, "I'm going to bring you the chayot and the oaf. I'm going to bring you the animals and the birds." And in the next pasuk, when he names them, there's behemot, chayot, and oaf. What's the difference between a behema and a chaya? Anybody know? A chaya is a wild animal. What's a behema? Not stam. It's a domesticated animal. Intrinsically, if I were to walk into a jungle, what's the difference between an animal that can be domesticated and an animal that cannot be domesticated? Nothing. If it's a wild animal, I'm probably dead either way. Me certainly. Makes no difference. In what way is there a difference between a domesticated animal and a non-domesticated animal? Singularly my relationship to it. Can I domesticate it? Can I relate to it in a way where it can live with me or not? He goes and names them, and we see even in the way that the animals are referred to that it's all coming and bringing forth this relationship piece in Perek Bet. We've been basically saying it the entire time. Love you. But the bottom line between the first presentation in Perek Aleph and the second presentation in Perek Bet is that, as we said before, Perek Aleph is an absolute perspective. If you want to use a different term, it's an objective perspective. Term we use for also a God's eye view, so to speak, of creation. Looking at things objectively, functionally. That's the first part of creation. When we come to Perek Bet, we need an entire separate entry point, investigation, examination of the creation of man. Because the first time that we saw the creation of man, we saw it from an absolute, objective perspective. There's an entirely different way to engage looking at the reality of the creation of man, and that's from not an absolute perspective, but a relative perspective. Relative, mi-lashon, if you will. Relationship. Right? How is man relating to everything in creation? From his subjective perspective. From a humanity's eye view of creation. And it's a very different experience. And the two are meant to be complementary. It's true of creation. And it's true of everything in our own lives. There is a way to see things from an objective, absolute perspective, but seeing things from an interrelational perspective, we're stuck in our own subjective perspective. That's also very important as well. There are two different floors, two different layers that need to be separated out into two different presentations. Because they're totally separate experiences and perspectives on the creation of man. And if we go through each of those levels, that's what we'll see. If you want to talk about the relationship between how man relates to God, that's what a name is by God. A name for a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't relate to God in essence. We can never know God in essence, and you can never limit God to anything, certainly not a word or a name. So God has different names that bring out different ways that I relate to God. In Perek Aleph, he's Elohim. Elohim is the name for Deen, judgment, objective. This is how it is. Defining its functionality, creating the laws, creating the systems, creating the rules. Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei is beyond that. Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei is a deeper relationship. Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei is the name that's often linked to which word, anybody know? Rachamim. Rachamim is, I see you and I have mercy on you. And I'm not going to punish you now because what might be later on I want. Mercy is already into relational term. We come to the animals, the first time they're created, and they have a function, and then man is created, and he has a function. Here, man is lonely, and so God creates the animals and brings the animals to him, and he names them based on his experience of them. And he sees that he can relate to them, but not relate to them fully. Why can't he relate to them fully? Because he needs a human partner. And that solidifies for him the reality that he needs something that is part of him, that is also human to relate to connect to. And that gives rise to a partner in woman. And then you have a reality of man and woman who both need to leave their homes at a certain point, and they need to reconnect with each other. It's not about the functionality of Puruvu and producing children. It's about their bonding and connecting and the loving relationship between the two. Perek Bet is all about that subjective relative terms of reality. Questions on these two presentations? When we talk about paragraphs, it might be that on a Perek and Pasuk level, we now have a division between Perek Bet and Gimel, but in the Chumash, there's no division in there in terms of Parsha, Ketucha, or Stuma. It's all one story of Gan Eden. Because the moment that we enter into the level of the way that we relate to each other and relate to the world, once we take into account the subjective world of man, the relative world of man and his relationship to it, that's also where trouble begins. Right? Very much relating to the Sefer that we're in, for those who were in Midrashah last semester, where we did Sefer Devarim. Almost all of our discussion in Sefer Devarim was, rather, changing perspective, moving from a subjective perspective, a broken subjective perspective, to making my subjective perspective God's objective perspective. That's the goal. We talked about that. That was literally the primary undercurrent of Sefer Devarim. Here's where everything falls apart. It fell apart in day six, I guess, technically. It fell apart from Perek Aleph. Because once you enter the subjective world of man, everything has the potential to fall apart. When you enter into the nuances of relationship, the subjectivity of relationship, everything has the potential to fall apart.
So it's very intense.
It's Bereshit. There's nothing more intense than Bereshit. Said maybe the end of Devarim, but the two are all full one circle. Right after he creates man and creates woman and brings them together in Perek Bet, let's go back to that pasuk now. The last pasuk of Perek Bet, pasuk chaf hey. Vayushneim arumim hadam v'ishtov lo yiposhashu. And at the time of their creation, man and woman were not clothed and they were not embarrassed. Chazal understand this to mean not just that they weren't wearing clothing, but that in the fact, in that pasuk, that they were involved in the physical act of bonding. They were involved in a physical relationship. And the moment that they enter into that physical relationship, that they do fully bond from a subjective bonding perspective, what happens in the very next pasuk? V'anachash ya'aru mikol chayat ha'sadeh. Then the nachash appears. Somehow, and we will unpack it at some point in the next couple of weeks. Somehow this physical relationship between the two, on some level, brings about the nachash. That's what gives its appearance. Breaking it up into the next parak is a disservice. The two things are one following the other, but there's no break in the paragraph of Chumash. The Nachash doesn't appear anywhere in the first presentation. It doesn't appear anywhere in Perek Aleph. Because the Nachash has no role there. But now that we're opening up a whole new level within the same sixth day of creation, we're talking about the perspective relative to man. And when we're talking about the subjective world of man, that opens up tremendous possibilities on both sides. It creates the possibility of relating to things in a healthy, productive, altruistic way. But it also creates the potential to relate to things from a place of negativity, of ra, of ta'ava, of selfishness. We see already the first time, which we're going to keep repeating these terms again and again, this inherent, I think, the most essential struggle of humanity, of this pull between selfishness and selflessness. But we open ourselves up to both. And that's what happens in the story when we come to eat from the Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra. Something goes wrong because we come at things from our not perfect subjective perspective. Something broken in that relationship. And that leads us to eat from the Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra. Let's conclude by taking 5-10 minutes, conclude here with this, and open up these terms of what is this Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra. Maze le'echol, what does it mean to eat? What is Da'at? And Maze Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra. Let's open up these terms. They're terms that we have to understand. Because once man eats from the fruits, it defines the world into which we enter after the chait. We're living in, and we still are living in, a post-chait Adam HaRishon world. A post-eating of the Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra. That's the nature of the reality that we live in. So what does that mean? So first of all, Mazeh Da'at. What is Da'at? What does it mean?
Knowledge.
So let's do a little better than that. In our deeper sources, there are 3 levels of knowledge. If I had a marker, I'd write that on the board. Okay, so stay with me. We'll go bottom line before it. The lowest level is Chokhmah. Then Bina. And then Da'at. If you take the first letter of each of those 3 words, what word do you get? Letter? Chabad, and that's where they get their name from. From this system of Chokhmah Bina Da'at. And if you want to understand really what Chokhmah Bina Da'at is in more than two inadequate minutes, read the literature of Chabad. That's where it's most beautifully discussed. On the simplest level, what is Chokhmah? Chokhmah is simply information. It's the intake of information. In this room right now, you're all existing on a level of Chokhmah. I'm standing here and talking. You're taking it in. You're hearing it. You're trying to hold on to it. You're trying to hold it into your mind. You're trying to hold it into your notes. Purely on a level of Chokhmah. That's where things start. If one is a thinking person, which I'd like to think everybody in this room is, or you wouldn't be here, but very little of the world is in general. If you're a thinking person, you then want to move to the stage of Bina. Milashon Bein, Lahavin, to understand between 2 things, to compare, to contrast. Bina is related to the word Binyan, to start to build a structure in my mind comprised of those components of knowledge. I'm thinking things out, I'm analyzing, I'm digesting, I'm going through that process of processing the food, of processing the information. I'm digesting, I'm trying to understand. Right, like with food, there's the intake of it, there's the eating, then there's the digesting. And then once my digestive process is finished, what comes next? The food actually becomes a part of me. That's what Da'at is really about. Da'at is really when 2 things become one. The classic example given for that is actually from our Parsha as well. Source number 4 in your sheets, the beginning of Perek Dalet. The Adam yada et Chava ishto, vatar vatilet et Kayin. Adam was Yodea Chava, and then she gave birth to Kayin. So it doesn't mean he knew of her or he had knowledge of her. It means that the 2 connected and became one. V'hayu l'basar echad, they became one. That's what produced new life. Da'at is the complete bonding, union of 2 things where 2 become one. On a level of knowledge, it's when that knowledge becomes so much a part of me that myself and the knowledge are inseparable. It's how I see the world so deeply that I can't be separated from that worldview. That knowledge is part of who I am. That's Da'at. Mazeh Da'at Tov V'Ra. Da'at Tov V'Ra means that there are 2 options now. There's Tov and there's Ra. And I now have the capacity to completely connect to, link myself into, become one with Ra. Or alternatively, I can fully become one with, connect to, become Tov, bond with Tov. I can have a da'at of Ra, or can I have a da'at of Tov? That's something that didn't exist before. Da'at Tov Ra is a state of being when one can equally fully connect, identify with, be a part of Tov, the world of good, the altruistic side of us. And at the same time, one can fully connect to, be a part of, internalize, and identify with Ra, with evil, with selfishness, with egocentricity, with Ta'ava. That's Da'at Tov and Da'at Ra. And we experience this inside of ourselves. When I go and do something good, when I help an old lady cross the street, I don't feel like some external force is doing that. I'm doing that. That's me. That's me. That's the part of myself that's Tov. And lo aleinu, if I go and I do an Avera, say, if I eat something that I'm not supposed to eat, so then I don't think to myself like, oh no, that wasn't me. That was my Yetzer Hara ate it. It's not a thing. I ate it. I feel that pain. I feel that destruction that I've caused because I ate it. It's part of me. That's my Ra side. How do I have these two sides, the ability to connect with Tov and connect with Ra? That comes to our last word. What do we have to define? Le'echol, to eat. The concept of eating here means itself both literally and also metaphorically, both levels. To eat something means to take something that was once external to me, to bring it to myself, and to literally bring it inside of myself. The eating of the Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra brings inside of humanity for the rest of history the capacity to have a Da'at Tov and a Da'at Ra. That's now part of who I am. I have the capacity to directly make Ra part of me or directly make Tov part of me. To have a Da'at Tov or have a Da'at Ra, and that's part of who I am, that's inside of me. Both of those are sides, legitimate sides of myself because I've internalized them by literally taking them into myself through the process of Achila. To wrap up. This brings us back to the question that we started with at the end of last year and the beginning of this year. Yes, there was a sin here. It's called Chet Adam HaRishon. And yes, Adam fell. And now he has this reality inside of him of both a potential to have a Da'at Tov and a Da'at Ra. And there's tremendous ramifications for all of history. But our question was, that's true. But if this all happens on the sixth day of Sheshit Yemei Bereishit, of the creation story, something needs to be created here that's necessary, that without which we can't walk out of Gan Eden. What's being created in this story that we need in order to go out to the world, to go out to live history? Not yet.
Maybe the Ra, like you can't like go out and be awful. You have to add something also.
Take it further. What can now happen? What capacity do we have that we didn't have before? Bechira chofshit. Free will is what is created in the story of Gan Eden. Bechira is what's created. It's the final piece that needs to be created before we can go out into history as it exists now. I need the capacity to have a pull and a da'at of Tov and a pull and a da'at to Ra and to choose between the two. Bechira chofshit is the essential element that defines humanity, and it's the final component of humanity that is created in the story of the Sheshit Yemei Bereishit. We come out of Gan Eden through this story with free will. Now that Bechira exists, mankind can leave Gan Eden. We can leave the womb of the world and enter into the realm of Olam Hazeh, which is a world where you need to make your own choices. Because a world where you make your own choices is a world where you have the potential to lead a meaningful life. A world without choice is a meaningless world. Once man is created with the capacity to make his own choices, then history can begin. History begins not with putting man into Gan Eden, but with sending man out of Gan Eden, with Bechirah Chofshit intact. I was thinking about it. Murray actually then mentioned it in the beginning of his next year, but to present it in a little bit of a different way based on what I was thinking when we came to that end piece of this year. We talked last time about the fact that the world is created, maybe this was 2 times ago in the introductory shir, that in the beginning of creation, Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et haaretz, the beginning of space and time. Bereshit inherently is in the beginning, implies the beginning of time. And Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et haaretz, the beginning of space. And we said that the Torah has bookends as showing us that it encompasses all of time and space. Because at the end of Torah we have this coming week's Parsha, Parshat Ha'azinu, which is the song of history as the Ramban describes it. And I wanted to claim there that the Ha'azinu Hashamayim Vadaber Atzishma Ha'aretz Imreifi. And I claimed 2 shiurim ago that that was the bookends are both describing how we live in the context. Torah creates literally is the framework of space and time. But which one is emphasized where? What's the emphasis in Bereshit? It's clearly more focused on space, the creation of the physical world. Bereshit is hinted to, it's clear in the word, but it's not as explicit. Hazinu is the song of history. It's the song of history. The end of Torah comes to describe to us what all of history is meant to look like. It deals more in the realm of finishing up humanity. We talked about this again in the first year, that the course of human history is the course of perfecting humanity. At the end of Parshat Nitzavim, it's all one flow. Nitzavim Vayelech Ha'azinu B'zot HaBracha. It's all one flow. At the end of Ha'azinu, it was so worth it to me that I made this source double-sided just to get the source on. And we read it last week, and it's so relevant now to the Parshiot that we're in the cycle of the Parshiot, and also standing before, right before Rosh Hashanah, just in a couple of days. But that this fundamental concept is so basic to everything we're meant to achieve in this world, that it's the fever pitch of basically one of the last teachings of Moshe, aside from Ha'azinu, which is a song that he's given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is on a whole other level. The last thing that Moshe Rabbeinu really tells the Jewish people, when the last thing he begs of us, is the last paragraph of Parshat Nitzavim, Re'ei natati lefanecha hayom et hachayim v'yata tov v'yata mavet v'yata ra. That fundamental choice between life and tov and death and ra. Skipping forward to Pasuk Yutet, Haidoti Vachem Hayom, I testify before you today at Hashemayim v'ata Aretz. Again, bringing back in the Shemayim and the Aretz there. Hachayim v'hamavet natati lefanecha, I put before you life and death. Habracha v'akala, I put before you blessing and curse. And what does he beg of us, Moshe? Uvacharta b'chayim. Choose life. Life is lived in the context of choice. Of Bechira. Bechira between Tov and Ra is what starts off human history, and the Bacharta Bachayim is what allows us to conclude Torah and conclude history. That's the goal. That's what gives life meaning, and that's what needs to be created in the 6th day in the second telling of the story of the 6th day of creation. The last point is that at the same time we pay a very big price. We now have to deal with our Yetzer Hara. We now have to deal with the capacity to be destructive, to be selfish, to choose Ra. That's now a distinct possibility. And in fact, as we're going to trace over the course of the rest of Bereshit and over the course of Parshat Noah, humanity in fact does choose Ra. And it does become destructive. And it leads to the destruction of the entire world. There's a heavy price to be paid for Bechirah Chofshit. Because if you can choose Tov and life, then you have to have the equal possibility of legitimately choosing Ra and death. And that's the world that we walk into, and we'll see this. It plays out in a very tragic way. But we all have to make our own choices. Life becomes meaningful because we can make it or break it. We can choose life, or chas v'shalom mehefek. And now that all of that potential has been created, mankind can leave Gan Eden, and history can begin. Just, again, bring that message home. We're standing here on Erev Rosh Hashanah, where the Sifrei Chaim and Sifrei Meitzim are open before us. We're choosing to be tzaddikim, tov, or to be rishayim. That's the essential choice that needs to be made. Choosing life means choosing tov, means choosing avodas Hashem, means choosing to have a da'at tov, and to reach back to the Eitz Chaim. That's what we're being judged on Rosh Hashanah. Are we living up to Moshe Rabbeinu's plea at the end of Sefer Devarim of Bacharta Bachayim L'Nav? Bezrat Hashem, we should all be zoche to choose life, to choose Tov. Through choosing life and Tov, to be written in the Book of Life and the Book of Tov for the year to come, the Book of Bracha. And as we go forward in our learning, we'll unpack this a lot more. I'm not sure exactly how or when. I haven't decided yet. There's a lot of ideas that I have in mind of how I want to do Bereshit differently this time than I did it 3 years ago. But either way, we will definitely continue Bezrat Hashem in some way, shape, or form in our exploration of Bereshit next week on both Monday and Wednesday. Shabbat, everybody.